You're listening to a special holiday edition of Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. As we pause tomorrow to celebrate America's independence from Britain, it's difficult to ignore the political backdrop against which this holiday takes place. Thousands of U.S. soldiers are stationed in Iraq fighting and many dying in a war promoted by the Bush administration as the liberation of Iraq. The lack of consistent electricity, clean water, and personal security has many Iraqis questioning the price of so-called liberation. Many in the peace movement who fought against the U.S. invasion, which has grown into an occupation force, are deeply troubled by the persistent chaos, abridgment of freedoms, and inhumane actions on the part of U.S. troops. In this next segment, we present a documentary of the movement which worked diligently to prevent the circumstances we are now witnessing in the wake of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Since the first national day of protests against the war in Iraq on October 6, 2002, the San Francisco anti-war movement has played an instrumental role in demanding an end to U.S. military actions in the Middle East. Bay Area labor organizers, environmentalists, veterans, youth, and mothers took to the streets in protest in the months leading up to the war, not only to speak out against a U.S.-led invasion, but to show solidarity with the people of Palestine and to speak out against what they perceived as the crackdown on civil liberties at home. We bring you now No Business as Usual, the San Francisco peace movement since October 2002, created by independent producers Pauline Bartolone and Sarah Olson at Pacifica Station KPFA in Berkeley, California.
Right after 9/11 happened, some of us were talking and we realized that this was going to be an entirely new situation, that the government was moving real fast with its plans for war on the world, bringing into existence some of the plans they'd already had on the table.
This war on terror was a front for moving an agenda much broader than just Iraq or just Afghanistan. We're talking about military aggression rhetoric all around the world. We're talking about extreme repression of civil liberties and cutbacks in domestic priorities across North America, across the United States. We're talking about a free ride for the corporate-led globalizers.
We saw what was coming down with our Arab and Muslim and South Asian brothers and sisters and the moves by people in power to really put into place the police state apparatus. And we said, we got to help build a movement.
This is not just a movement of pacifism or a movement against military aggression. It is a movement against an attempt to railroad democracy on multiple fronts. And we will link all of these struggles because we recognize that if we lose ground on any of them, we could lose ground on all of them.
My name is Hatem Bezian, and my involvement in the peace movement has been long-standing. But in this particular effort, I was part of both the Palestinian as well as the Muslim contingent in the Bay Area, helping coordinate the turnout for Palestinian community as well as the Muslim community.
My name is Gopal Dianeni. I'm one of the many people who are part of Direct Action to Stop the War. I used to be the oil campaign coordinator with Project Underground. I left my job in February in order to do full-time work in opposition to the war, both international aggression and domestic repression.
This area is the hub of progressive politics within the U.S., not only in relations to Palestine or the war. The labor movement has its birth at the docks in San Francisco and the docks in Oakland. The Chinese movement had its foundation out here. If you look at the farm workers, United Farm Workers with Cesar Chavez, and even before that, the campesinos, the workers, it had a very strong foundation here in the West Coast. If you look at the Indian movement, American Indian movement, the last stand for the Native American resistance was at Alcatraz here in San Francisco. So if you look at the history of political movement, this is an epicenter for progressive politics in general.
And we knew that we had incredible mobilizing potential in the Bay Area, and we knew that we could light a spark across the country, a spark that could join the fire that has been raging across the world in opposition to U.S. military aggression.
President Bush signed the authorization for the use of military force against Iraq.
In the events of September the 11th,
We resolve as a nation to oppose every threat from any source that could bring sudden tragedy to the American people. I thank the Congress for a thorough debate and an overwhelming statement of support.
My immediate emotion is anger, but not anger based on frustration, but anger for the disregard that the Bush administration has had toward the worldwide community.
For me personally, you know, outrage was probably the first emotion.
I couldn't think of any other expression to oppose the war other than being out in the street, because it seems to be if one is at home, there is a sense of normalcy into what is taking place.
Are you mad?
Yeah!
Are you angry?
Yeah!
Are you outraged?
Yeah!
You should be! It's our money that's fueling this war effort.
Why am I here today? I'm here because I'm sad, and I think coming together with other people who really care about things that I care about, whether or not they come from the same viewpoint, is really a nourishing experience.
Makes me feel like me working and living and sustaining in this country is killing people I don't know, and I wouldn't even kill somebody I did know.
You know, I struggle with how to make my opinions heard. I've written my representatives, and this is my third rally, and I'm not sure what else I can do.
Bush betrayed us. We didn't vote for him. He's not really our president, and he's leading us into something that we don't want, so we have to say no.
I'm actually proud to be an American. I've always liked living in the U.S., and I have been proud most of my life, but what the U.S. is doing right now in the world makes me ashamed.
I feel like my country has been taken away, and we're gonna have to take it back.
I'm up here today because I'm protesting the war on Iraq. The fact that the United States is going to bomb Iraq with absolutely no international support, I think it's outrageous. I think it's heartbreaking. I think it's appalling. I think our government is a total loose cannon in the world, and that we can only come out into the streets in order to protest right now.
October 6th definitely was sort of one of the first times that a lot of shutters opened for people, and then it just sort of started to spiral from there. You know, you had October 26th, which was the answer rally that happened 20 days after, and you saw the growth from October 6th to just, you know, 20 days later, and then it just continued in that fashion.
We are the privileged subjects of the empire. And we need to send a very clear message to this government and to the war makers. We will throw our bodies into the machine.
No human being is illegal. Ningún ser humano es ilegal.
The greatest enemy is our own inaction.
If Bush insists on proceeding with this racist war, we're going to shut this city down.
We have hope. It is not too late. We can stop this war.
We must keep resisting, keep fighting, and never give up.
Just telling me that the Chronicle said that there was about 40,000 or 50,000 people here. Let's let them hear what it sounds like when there's 200,000 people here.
I see more than 40,000. I see 80,000. I see 100,000. And how can they tell it's 40 or 100? It's a matter of calling it. And the media, as well as those in power, when they want to diminish a movement, they will diminish the numbers. And this is exactly what they're doing.
In here, numbers, I would say, were signifying something else. It was signifying a diminishing of the importance and the critical mass of the people who are opposed to the war. So the media was trying to downplay the critical number of people that were out on the streets in the hundreds of thousands, which we have not seen in this area from the period of the Vietnam War. And the Vietnam War beginning in the early 60s, and we didn't get the large masses until the late 60s and early 70s. So in here, the war have not yet started, and the kind of mobilization that we saw on the street was so tremendous.
No!
I think what's going to happen.
To use a weapon of mass destruction is the United States. Let's be real.
Now, when we speak about something that's called hypocrisy, hypocrisy, when you see it, it's often you know what it is, you know how it looks, you know how it walks, and you know how it works. And the Bush administration is just full of hypocrisy. We're speaking about weapons of mass destruction. Now, our country in here is the number one producer of weapons of mass destruction. Yeah! Our economy is built on weapons of mass destruction. We sell to the world weapons of mass destruction, and we don't care sometimes. We sell to both sides when we sold weapons of mass destruction to Iraq and Iran. So tell me if you are seeing hypocrisy in here.
Yeah.
The United States have more weapons of mass destruction than any other country in the world, and everyone knows it. And where is the democracy when you have an illegal president? Where is the democracy when you have people arrested for the color of their skin, for their religion, or for ethnic? When people doing the line in front of UN, INS and registering their country origin. I mean, what democracy is that?
INS, FBI, no more detentions, no more lies.
Often when we move toward a militarized society, the militarization that is reflected externally will have a manifestation internally.
Each of these blue triangles has the names of one of the men who has disappeared in the U.S. since 9/11. Since September 11, thousands of Muslims, Arabs, and South Asians have been detained and disappeared by the U.S. government through racial profiling, through national targeting. Many of them have been denied due process. Many of them have been deported without trial. Not a single charge of terrorism and no evidence linking any of these men to the events of September 11th has yet been presented.
Basically, INS is requiring men over the age of 14 who are from certain countries, predominantly Middle Eastern countries, to come in and special register.
I'm from Tunisia. I came here to study. I'm going to school. And I don't really want to finish school. I think that I'm going back to my country next week. They will respect me, have an honor, and I'll have my rights. Here I have nothing.
When they come in, they're being fingerprinted, they're being questioned, they're being asked the same questions over and over again. A lot of times, they're actually being fingerprinted several times over again.
The special registration program was racial profiling. Racial profiling is something that we accept as wrong across this country, and that has been an impact on communities of color for a long time.
We're here to object to the INS special registration policy and to the mass detentions that it's leading to.
These are the 3 days when men from various countries, men and boys, have been called in to register at the INS here. So it's basically to let the INS know and to let the world know that this process is being watched. There are people out here bearing witness to what's going on and protesting it.
And so communities of color came together and said, what they're doing to us, they're not doing to our brothers and sisters from South Asian, Middle Eastern countries, any country that the U.S. decides is going to be a terrorist state.
All told, more than 3,000 suspected terrorists have been arrested in many countries. Many others have met a different fate. Let's put it this way. They're no longer a problem to the United States and our friends and allies.
San Francisco has been declared a city of sanctuary, a city of refuge, and we just don't mean that for empty words. We mean that with our hearts, we mean that and politically, and we mean that economically. no war, no discrimination because you happen to look Arab. Let's learn from history. No one wants to be terrorized, but no one wants to be terrorized by the government in the name of terrorism.
As one of 120,000 Japanese Americans that 60 years ago during World War II, we were the ones that were uprooted, evacuated, and incarcerated in remote places in America. We do not want that ever to happen again to anyone else.
I can't stand by and do nothing as history repeats itself, as the crimes of the government that the government's committed in the past lumber in front of us, just far enough to see and not quite close enough for the public to verify. We need to catch up with it, grab it by the neck, stare it in the face and say, God damn it, I see what you're doing.
We could not miss the link between the process of attempting to marginalize members of our community from the rest of us, from the fact that they are trying to marginalize us from the international community.
When you lie to one of us, you lie to all of us. And when you detain one of us, you detain all of us. And when you terrorize some of us, you terrorize every single one of us.
The simple truth is, if you let them go after anybody, they will go after everybody. And that we absolutely need to stand together and hold the ground of democracy for everyone. We can't allow them to pick people off from our communities and let us think that some people's interests are more important than others, that the idea of civil liberties and human rights could be selectively extended to particular populations. They're human rights for a reason. They're civil rights for a reason. Everyone should have them.
First, I'm not a terrorist. I don't want to be identified to terrorist, and I don't want to be treated like a terrorist. I'm a man. I have human rights. I'm the country who's supposed to be the country of freedom, the freedom land, and it's not.
This is what democracy looks like. Look around, everyone. Are we beautiful? You're right, George Bush. We're a focus group. We're a worldwide focus group of millions of people. And we're focused on justice and peace. We don't get that from war. Bring those troops home. Give them hope here. Give them a job and a chance at a good education.
I think the intensity possibly in the February period was where the heavy intensity of organizing and turnout. So it started strong, essentially, and then built more. And by February, I would say we were in a very strong position, both here in the U.S. and internationally. And I think for a moment, there was a possibility, maybe remote, but there was a possibility that this overwhelming public display of opposition to the war might lead to a change.
Before aerial bombardment of Baghdad from 30,000 feet began on the 19th of March, there had been several direct actions. People had been building momentum. We'd actually been practicing civil disobedience in the streets. We had a massive action that was bigger than our expectations at the Pacific Stock Exchange. We had continued to do civil disobedience beginning in October and all through that period.
We believe that just as this historic part of our history in the United States to do civil disobedience, you know, all the way back, abolition movement, the civil rights movement, the farm workers movement, you know, all of these different movements have been ways of bringing about change in America in nonviolent ways. And we should just do everything we can to put our bodies, to put our minds, put our thoughts, do everything we can to try to stop this war effort.
A reporter asked, so has
when has direct action ever worked? And, you know, my response to that is, well, India is no longer a British colony. Indonesia is no longer a military dictatorship. And dare we mention civil rights?
If war breaks out,
walk out.
If war breaks out,
walk out.
All right, 12 p.m. Civic Center, right here. 5 p.m. Powell and Market. If you hear about the war on the news, get down here. We have to speak up.
President Bush expected to talk in less than 2 minutes about the beginning of airstrikes against Iraq and the start of the war to disarm Iraq in the terms of the White House.
Coalition forces have begun striking selected targets of military importance to undermine Saddam Hussein's ability to wage war. These are opening stages of what will be a broad and concerted campaign.
When the bombs started falling on the 19th and we took to the streets on the 20th in what was a historic disruption of operations in San Francisco by people representing broad spectrums of American civil society in the Bay Area, people came to it with a feeling of, I cannot in good conscience sit at home and watch the horror on TV. I can't go to work and pretend that nothing is happening. And that feeling really drove people to get out there.
I was just saying to someone, it's really surreal because they're already counting the casualties over in Iraq, of the Iraqi deaths, you know, like hundreds of people. And at the same time, there's a real spirit of, like, you know, of resistance going on in the streets all over the country. Like here in San Francisco, we've blocked 30 intersections, shut down the Bay Bridge. The federal building has been contained since 7 o'clock this morning. The Bechtel building has been contained since 7 o'clock this morning. And people are really determined to resist the injustices.
I've been watching the news and seeing the images of people's hometown being bombed by the United States.
And the bombing was happening morning, noon, and night.
Kathy Kelly of Voices in the Wilderness.
There were civilian areas that were hit with some regularity, even in the poorest area in what was called Saddam City. People living there described to us how their children would crouch down on the ground with their hands over their heads and windows shattered into the house and a ceiling fan fell down. Any place that had a military installation in the neighborhood, and there were many places like that all across Baghdad, was fair ground in the U.S. eyes for being a target.
For the first time in history, on the first day of a U.S. war of aggression, a major U.S. city was crippled and shut down by people of good conscience.
It became this sort of like carnival smorgasbord of, you know, different direct actions from people, you know, sitting silently meditating to linking arms with sort of plastic tubing around them. And you'd see, you know, slowly but surely the cops sort of sawing off each of the plastic tubes. And then you'd get to the next spot and there'd be sort of a salsa band playing, you know. And again, these were all sort of different intersections and locations where they had actually, you know, taken the street and sat down. And you'd have rows of maybe two or three deep, anywhere from 50 to 150 people blocking an intersection, you know, sort of stretched across the length of Market Street, which is, I guess, a 4 or 5 lane street. And then you'd have just a circle of people surrounding them, sort of watching and listening and agitating and, you know, dancing or meditating or singing. It really had different flavors.
We had the Brass Liberation Orchestra, people marching around town with instruments, singing music and bringing music to demonstrations to de-escalate tense situations with police. We had all kinds of specialty roles of folks who were getting training as police liaisons to be able to communicate with the police and make sure that the police behaved appropriately in the face of non-violent civil non-cooperation with the war machine.
Are they arresting people?
Nothing yet.
Are they arresting people?
Hi, could you maybe introduce yourself and telling what organization you belong to or what you're doing here?
I'm just here for peace with friends from Santa Cruz. We're all wearing white in representation for peace and to be in solidarity with one another.
In the hospital that I visited, the Al-Hindi Hospital, I met two young boys whose bones were completely shattered by bombing. I met a little girl whose chest had been ripped open. I saw a little boy with no anesthetic trying to cope with the pain of his abdominal cavity having been ripped open by shrapnel. They didn't have enough ambulances to go out and pick up people out on the streets, and doctors weren't always able to get to the hospitals, maybe because their own areas had been bombed or because it simply was no longer safe to be inside of a hospital once the chaos broke out and looters were coming in those directions.
And the cops don't want us on the streets. You know, we can't walk through, so we wanted to go to Union Square last time. They blocked the streets, so we couldn't go there. So, you know, it's a little bit overkill, I think, especially when we supposedly have a constitutional right to freedom and peaceably assemble in this country. This is really a police state.
We just want to be in solidarity with everybody around the world right now for the peace movement, for not having the war in our names as Americans.
So how do you see the future of this protest? Do you think they will go on after, like, the war ends?
I don't know.
Anything else to add from your side?
No.
Thanks.
My fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
I think we're all asking the same difficult questions about where do we go from here. And I think the first thing we need to do is ask that question. We need to ask that of each other. We need to create spaces where people come together and are having these discussions.
When we look at America, there's always two Americas that we could speak of. There's the America of the slave owner, and there's the America of the slave. These are two different Americas. There's America of the civil rights movement. There's America of Malcolm X. There's America of Martin Luther King. There's America of the Black Panther. There's America in the streets, and then there's America in the White House, in the Congress. Those are two different Americans. Today, this is another America that we're looking at.
Dissent is all we have. I mean, we might not win. This could be the beginning of World War III, but at least we can feel in our hearts that we went down kicking and fighting and making our voices heard against in a time when they absolutely want to silence us. That is an amazing form of resistance, and it's heartening and it's heartwarming, and we want to keep the choir singing. We want to keep screaming against the, you know, United States government and all its running dogs all over the world, and maybe eventually in history we will have prevailed.
No business as usual. The San Francisco peace movement since October 2002, created by independent producers Pauline Bartolone and Sarah Olson at Pacifica Station KPFA in Berkeley, California. Special thanks to Suzanne Grabner and Sonny Angelo for production assistance. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett and Adel Hamid of KPFA. It's your financial support that makes this program possible. So please, pledge your support through our secure online website at pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.